This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the collapse of Dubai and the deepening global capitalist crisis. Thanksgiving Eve. Dubai World shook financial markets by asking for a six-month moratorium on paying its debt, estimated at between $60 and $90 billion. It was calling for a standstill agreement. Think about it. You have a home mortgage. You can't meet the payments. You say to the bank, I am not going to pay my mortgage payments for another 6 months. How would the bank respond? Global markets collapsed. However, the New York Stock Exchange and markets in the Arab world were closed. Was this specific timing? This is what we will discuss on Taking Aim today and how it affects worldwide financial crisis. Before we do so, let's speak again with Ralph Poynter about the case of Lynn Stewart. The appellate court last week rescinded her bail, and tomorrow in the federal court, Judge Kirtle will review her sentence. The appellate court said the 28-month sentence for the conviction wasn't enough, and Judge Kirtle should consider a much longer sentence for Lynn Stewart, who has devoted her life to defending the poor and political prisoners. Ralph, please give us the update.
Lynn is Lynn. She's in prison, and I'm going to talk about the good things first. The woman who was making the film, her and her husband, Claude Francis Erdogan, they're French-Canadian, wrote a heartfelt letter to Judge Kirtle and President Obama, and the response was fabulous. You can look at it and read the responses from world notables suggesting the opposite of the appeals court, that Lynn Stewart be dealt with in a just manner. So that news, that people are paying attention, is good news. The bad news is Lynn had scheduled a operation at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York, one of the premier hospitals, for December 7th. Not knowing that there was going to be an order to go to jail immediately. Generally, there's time when a decision comes down. They designate a prison, bail pending, the appeal to the Supreme Court, whatever. They said go to jail instantly. So now she's caught in a situation where the operation that is necessary will be performed in what's known as a prison jail, downtown Beekman, which does not have the reputation of Lenox Hill. And Lynn has been put between a rock and a hard place because she's decided that although she's in jail, she's not in a terrorist cell where it's cold. I can't call it comfortable. She has adopted to her surroundings, and she fears that if she were to get a stay for a few days from the judge, she might not get conditions as decent as she has now. So she has opted to just stay in the prison, and I assume, and I will know more about this tomorrow in the courtroom as to what is actually going to happen there. She writes wonderful letters that were the same Lynn, and you wonder about the timing of the Dubai situation. Well, I don't think anybody has to wonder about the timing of arresting Lynn, because as I said on the last program, wait till we hear a lawyer defending the so-called terrorist say, I'm concerned about torture, I'm concerned about evidence used, I'm concerned about the government participating in attorney-client relationships, I'm concerned about the government having their interpreter in the meeting with the lawyers. You will not hear that, and that is the timing of this.
Ralph, we encourage all our listeners to attend the hearing tomorrow, Wednesday, December 2nd, Judge Kirtle's courtroom, United States District Court, Southern District of New York, and that's at 500 Pearl Street, Courtroom 12B. Again, 500 Pearl Street, Courtroom 12B in New York, in Manhattan.
At 10 a.m.
10 a.m.
brothers and sisters, you have to understand what's involved here. Lynn's bail has been revoked deliberately and arbitrarily to put her in prison. And when she goes to prison, they don't allow her to take in her medications. They don't allow her to take in even reading material or books. There she is in prison with the prospect of the sentence on the orders of the Second Circuit, or the recommendation of the Second Circuit, being increased from 28 months to something from 80 to 97 months. We don't know. Everybody has to be at that courtroom. We have to go out there in force, in numbers. We have to make our presence known. Everybody has to write to Lynn. Brothers and sisters, we've been calling for a campaign across the country of letter writing, 1,000 letters a day a minimum. We want the prison flooded with letters to Lynn Stewart. Ralph?
When you write to her, put on the outside as well as on the inside, on the outside envelope, Lynn Stewart, MCC, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007, and the number is 53504. -054.
And the address is also on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Ralph, could you describe the reception that Lynn received from the other prisoners at the Metropolitan Correction Center?
An email went out from Betty Davis of the New Abolitionist Movement, and the gist of this email was, the people in the prisons, the prisoners themselves, understood what Lynn represented on the outside and what she, her life represented, and gave her a wonderful, wonderful welcome. As a matter of fact, she wrote in her letter that the inmates had better be careful of treating her so well that she might not want to come home when they let her out. Well, I'm not worried about that, but this is the way she felt. She simpatico with them and they with her, so that's the best of the bad situation, that is, being in prison.
And I want to just say this, Ralph, when you reference the trial that's being, the show trial that's scheduled for the tortured Guantanamo prisoners and whoever they have staged to represent the persona of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed having been assassinated by FBI operatives and special forces of the Pakistanis on the first anniversary of 9/11. Interestingly enough, that the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed persona, who has confessed to 31 separate plots, confessed specifically to planning and organizing the blowing up of the World Trade Center in 1993. Wow, now we know who did it. Release Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. Obviously, he's falsely accused. The government has decided that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed did it. Release Lynn Stewart. She was defending correctly and appropriately the rights of the blind Egyptian cleric framed. Now the government's own attempts to orchestrate a new fear campaign around the terror trials in New York. The big charade, the terrorizing of the American people, is concentrated in the persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart. Those are the stakes, brothers and sisters. Everybody out to the courtroom tomorrow. The struggle is only in its beginning phase. We're going to see Lynn free. Everybody must be mobilized around that objective.
Well, let us remember, this is a part of American history. I think of the lynchings in the South. It didn't matter that they caught the so-called perpetrator. They just lynched a black man to keep people in place. When the unions were organizing, they just put somebody in jail, a union organizer, to keep the unions in their place. When the communists were organizing, they just arrested and executed a communist to keep the rest of the people in their place. And we just have a new form of let's arrest the thing that we're afraid of and the justice that they're afraid of, the Constitution that they're afraid of, and keep the people in fear.
You have summarized it, Ralph, and we'll be talking to Ralph again next week. And we again urge everybody to appear at the courthouse tomorrow. Repeat the address, Maya.
500 Pearl Street, courtroom 12B at 10 a.m.
Thanks so much, Ralph. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Brothers and sisters, we're now going to proceed with the crisis of the world capitalist system concentrated in the collapse of Dubai.
Ralph, I mentioned Dubai World. Nakheel, which is a division of Dubai World, has Islamic bonds. They're called Sukuk bonds because in the Muslim religion, you're not supposed to charge interest. So they've set up a form that hides the fact that interest payments are being made, and they're called Sukuk bonds. Now, Akil, which is the real estate division of Dubai World, has $3.52 billion of Islamic bonds that are due to be repaid December 14th. Aside from that, much of the other debt of Dubai World is due the first quarter of 2010. What is Dubai World? It was only established in March 2006 by a decree that was ratified by the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. And Sheikh Mohammed holds the majority stake in the company. There are four arms of investment: transport and logistics, dry docks and maritime, urban development, and investment and financial services. The urban development is at crisis. Crisis because in Dubai, real estate values have tumbled 50% since 2008. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the world crisis that is unfolding here was summarized rather well in the Christian Science Monitor, an article by Ron Shearer on November 27th. Why debt at Dubai World is shaking world financial markets. As conglomerate Dubai World delays debt payments, most analysts look for the Arab Monetary Fund to step in to avert a crisis in financial markets. That's not likely, though, until Sunday. Sunday is past, brothers and sisters. There is no bailout coming from the Arab Monetary Fund. And the article continues, how can Dubai, a tiny emirate on the Persian Gulf, shake financial markets from Shanghai to New York? The answer is familiar to tens of thousands of Americans struggling to make payments on their mortgages or credit cards. Too much debt. On Thursday, Dubai World, a conglomerate, shook world financial markets by asking for a six-month moratorium on paying interest on debt, estimated between $60 billion and $90 billion. And actually, I should say parenthetically that the $90 billion is a gross underestimate of this actual indebtedness. It's based upon the same blind and rampant speculation and basically the casino of finance capital that has brought about the great collapse of the subprime market, brothers and sisters. Immediately after the announcement, the article continues, Asian equity markets swooned by 5%. The selling continued on the London market. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average opened 224 points off. The problems in Dubai brought back memories of the financial collapse that beset the U.S. and Europe after the mortgage meltdown. That collapse led to the worst recession since World War II. Actually, I should add, since 1929. And there were indications that investors have pulled out their meltdown road map. They are buying U.S. Treasury bills in a flight, which drove the U.S. dollar higher and brought down not only the stock market, but the price of gold and oil. The article states global analysts expect the Arab Monetary Fund, based in Abu Dhabi, the capital of the United Arab Emirates, of which Dubai is part, to step in. But the offices in Abu Dhabi are closed because it is the start of Hajj, an annual pilgrimage to Mecca. The Arab Monetary Fund is likely to ask Dubai World for restraint, said Gartman. Dubai World has been an aggressive real estate developer, investing in everything from Troon Golf Courses and the Turnberry Golf Courses in Scotland. It has interest in the Chris Everett Tennis Centers, the Snowmass Resort in Colorado. It owns P&O Maritime Services, the major Australian-based company. It does defense contract work, and Dry Docks World, which provides shipping services across the world from Singapore to the Persian Gulf. You understand what's at stake here, brothers and sisters? They own most of the ship docks and dockyards in the world. And what is unfolding here is a collapse, brothers and sisters, even if Dubai is rescued by Abu Dhabi. The David Kotuk, chairman of Cumberland Advisors in Wineland, New Jersey, wrote on, the Dubai World debt crisis has contagion risk. It cannot be papered off by excess liquidity, not in the Middle East, or for that matter, in America, unquote. Maya?
Ralph, I mentioned that Dubai World was set up in 2006 by Sheikh Mohammed. Sheikh Mohammed only took power 4 years ago after the death of his brother. As soon as he took power, he set up by decree Dubai World, of which he was the main shareholder. People may recall that Dubai has built the tallest buildings in the world and currently is trying to even top that with the construction of another taller building in the world.
200 stories high. 200 stories high, brother.
And created artificial islands in a shape of palm trees. The spectacular boom year saw Dubai rise from the desert, from a pearl collecting and fishing community to this mega glitzy Las Vegas type center of the Middle East. While this construction was taking place, Dubai World bought many corporations throughout the world, such as in 2007 investing $5 billion in the casino operator MGM Mirage, an $8.5 billion Las Vegas property. As well, Istihmar World, one of the Dubai World sections, bought the U.S. luxury retail chain Barney's for $942 million in 2007. And the Nakheel property developer arm of Dubai World, which is going into default, along with the investment arm, bought a 20% stake in the Montreal-based international circus touring company Cirque du Soleil in June of 2008. And the plans are to build a Cirque du Soleil theater on this palm-shaped island. The golf course, as Ralph mentioned, but also Queen Elizabeth II, the luxury liner. It was originally bought in 2007 for $100 million to be converted into a luxury hotel and moored off of Dubai's Palm Artificial Island. Another major investment was in Atlantis Hotel, which is primarily empty.
These are all investments in fluff, in indulgence, in ruling class privilege. They have absolutely nothing to do with the infrastructure of a society. They have nothing whatsoever to do with the dying cities across the United States and developing countries across in the world. And they have nothing to do with the fact that a billion and a half people are hungry in the world. How did the Dubai crisis unfold? Here is the Financial Times on November 27th. As Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed Al Maktoum, the dashing crown prince of Dubai, gave his first address at the World Economic Forum, his father's governing body sacks the head of Dubai's International Finance Center and removes three key figures from the board of the government holding company, the Investment Corporation of Dubai. The three lieutenants include Dubai's world chairman, Sultan bin Sulayyam, who led Dubai's debt-fueled overseas investment drive and real estate bubble over a decade, replaced by Ahmed Al-Tayer, the old guard member of a merchant family and two of the ruler's sons, in what was interpreted as a sidelining of the technocrats who presided over the emirate's boom. Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al-Maktoum, Dubai's steely and enigmatic ruler, arrives in London, accompanied by the new head of Dubai's financial center on a state visit to the UK. He discusses Middle East peace. He discusses the standoff over Iran. And with who, brothers and sisters? David Miliband, foreign secretary. He then meets Queen Elizabeth, with whom he shares a keen interest in horse racing. He finishes the day with an audience with Gordon Brown, the prime minister, and discusses joint efforts to mitigate the impact of the global economic downturn. Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, states he was very impressed by the UAE economy's quick recovery, in addition to prudent steps taken by the country's government and leadership to minimize the recession's impact, unquote, according to a press release from the United Arab Emirates. The article is extraordinary because the default widens, as it describes. By nightfall, there is no government comment and confusion reigns. Investors are uncertain whether Dubai World's crown jewel, DP World, is included in the restructuring of its parent. Global markets slump on fears that the Dubai default will trigger a contagion in other emerging markets. Bondholders, led by a New York hedge fund, are organizing themselves and appointing legal advisors to communicate with Dubai World. Sheikh Ahmed bin Saeed Al Maktoum breaks the Emirates' silence with a curt statement saying he understands the concerns of the market and is determined to take action. The government is spearheading restructuring of our commercial operations. And the article continues, the world's markets wobble, uncertain over the extent and implication of Dubai's woes. This, brothers and sisters, the Financial Times discloses, is a crisis affecting the entire global financial economy, triggered by this boondoggle undertaking in Dubai.
Ralph, the comment of Sheikh Al-Maktoum was specific. On November 26th, his statement was, quote, "Our intervention in Dubai World was carefully planned and reflects its specific financial position. The government is spearheading the restructuring of this commercial operation in the full knowledge of how the markets would react." The Financial Times on November 30th, an article by Simon Kerr, "Dubai rejects debt guarantee," says it outright. Dubai's government will not guarantee the debts of Dubai World, the state-owned holding company struggling under the weight of $59 billion in liabilities, arguing that lenders were mistaken to think that there was sovereign backing. This is very similar to what took place in the United States with the federal housing loan markets, which in fact are private. Investors thought that the U.S. government would back up these bonds. In fact, the United States didn't have the obligation to back up the bonds, but as we have discussed on Taking Aim in many shows, the government stepped in and bailed out the banks and bailed out the mortgage market. It was expected that in Dubai, where the sovereign owns most of Dubai World, that he would put the assets of Dubai behind Dubai World, but he didn't. Then they thought that the United Arab Emirates, of which Dubai is one of the members, and Sheikh Maktoum is the vice premier of the UAE, that the Emirates itself, specifically Abu Dhabi, which is the richest of the Emirates in terms of oil resources, Dubai has very limited oil resources. Most of its financial power comes from tourism and real estate. Was the Federal Banking of Abu Dhabi going to back Dubai? The answer was no. They would not back Dubai World, but they would give greater lending to the banks. Ralph.
The Boston Globe and Associated Press, Maya, on November 27th, a look at Dubai World Holdings, a subsidiary of Dubai World, leading operator of port facilities worldwide, created after the purchase of London-based Peninsula and Oriental Steam Navigation Company in 2006. The Leisure Corp, a Gulf development company that is the major force behind the new Race to Dubai, the world's richest golf tournament. DP World operates as well 50 ports across Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, and South America, including key maritime gateways as Hong Kong, Busan, South Korea, and Southampton in Great Britain. The magnitude of this boondoggle financial speculation that has translated into control over key ports in the world is without any question a symbol of the corruption and the utter futility of finance capital. Nowhere is it better articulated than in this article on the same date, November 27th, in The Guardian by Dan Roberts, called Castles in the Sand. The biggest mystery, he writes, of the Dubai debt crisis is not why the desert dream has turned into a nightmare, but why it took so long. Ever since, he states, the U.S. homeowners started defaulting on subprime mortgages 2 years ago, the tightening of international lending conditions has put the squeeze on these investment bubbles around the world. Like Iceland or the British housing boom, they popped quickly. The others have been slower to collapse. The common feature is an excess of cheap borrowing that lulls investors into thinking that permanent wealth is being created. It is a fake. Like any investment bubble, it works as long as more money is sucked in to keep inflating asset prices, and it falls as soon as the new money disappears. The key difference, Dan Roberts writes in The Guardian, with a debt bubble like the one bursting around us now, is that there can be a significant time lag between asset prices beginning to fall and the acknowledgement by the investors of their mounting losses. Unlike the dot-com share bubble, which drove stock markets up and then quickly down again at the turn of the century, the credit bubbles take a while to deflate fully and catastrophically. The developers who built those skyscrapers in Dubai knew it was getting harder to fill them. They knew the property prices were falling. But as long as they could pay an interest bill to the banks, they hung on, gambling that things would improve. The banks had no incentive to foreclose, Dan Roberts writes, because it would only force more of the property onto the open market, further depress the price of their remaining assets, and escalate the culminating collapse. If anything, it has become easier to keep hanging on because governments around the world drove down interest rates and kept pumping fresh government money into these markets. Yet, he writes, the fragility of Dubai's castles in the sand could not be ignored forever. With no prospect of a new boom to replace the old one, property developers have finally acknowledged an unpalatable truth, he writes. The big fear now is that the international banks, notably many of Britain's largest banks, can no longer even pretend that these half-empty failing office blocks are worthy collateral for tens of billions of dollars of debt that have been continuously extended. The banking estimates at UBS estimate that the Emirates' total debt burden is way above the $80 billion to $90 billion admitted so far, with vast off-balance sheet liabilities lurking in the shadows. Register this, brothers and sisters. It's the tip of the iceberg. $90 billion in this little concentrated speculative oasis of futility based upon nothing but the empty, fictive capital speculating and deriving an artificial value from same to drive profits into the multi-billions.
Ralph, today Moody's came out with the estimate of over $100 billion of debt for Dubai. Ralph?
There's no longer any pretense, brothers and sisters, that finance capital is engaged in producing or advancing productive forces. Dan Roberts continues, not only does the Dubai crisis threaten to further destabilize the West's battered banks, but it points to the danger of thinking that the world economy is through the worst. From Dublin to Shanghai, there are plenty of other property bubbles that have yet to fully burst. In Britain, the commercial property market is hiding painful horrors, with the banks unwilling to accept this cluster of developers through which they are investing billions of dollars are, as Dan Roberts states, insolvent. The Dubai crisis, he writes, has thrown a new name into the lexicon of toxic instruments. Just as credit derivatives helped to exacerbate the subprime crisis by obscuring who was ultimately exposed to losses, the use of Islamic finance has complicated the reckoning. The sukuk bonds, the anti-interest bonds, are designed to get around religious laws banning the payment of interest for money lending, but one of the most volatile debts in the Dubai world standstill is the $3.5 billion Islamic bond due to be repaid in December without any prospect of its being done. Sukuk bonds replaced interest payments with a promise to share profits. The investors are effectively owners of the underlying assets instead of the secured creditors who have lent and given them the money. So the creditors are secured by nothing. Default on this scale, Dan Roberts writes, has never been tested before. And it echoes the nervousness in derivative markets because this banking crisis has just started. HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, estimates there is $822 billion of financial debt outstanding. $822 billion in this little island of speculative frenzy, brothers and sisters, rippling through the global economic system.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Dubai and the Deepening Global Capitalist Crisis. Ralph, I mentioned before that Moody's, the ratings agency, today estimated that the Dubai government and its related entities, primarily Dubai World, had a debt of $100 billion. What we have to understand what this $100 billion signifies. This is more than 100% of the gross domestic product of Dubai. As you had mentioned, this is not coming from productive forces. The gross domestic product of Dubai are sales and services, meaning the real estate and the tourism industry, which has collapsed. So the income in Dubai is also going to reflect a collapse, and probably the gross domestic product for next year will be well below that $100 billion. Let's look at what I mentioned before, that the United Arab Emirates, primarily Abu Dhabi, which is the financial center of the Emirates because it holds most of the oil. And if you take the Emirates all told, 1/10 to 1/8 of the world supply of oil comes from these Persian Gulf statelets. The New York Times, November 30th, UAE will support banks in Dubai credit crisis. The United Arab Emirates Central Bank on Sunday said that it stood behind domestic and foreign banks operating in Dubai after last week's announcement that Dubai World needed more time to pay back some of its $60 billion in debt. On Sunday, the central bank said that it set up a liquidity facility for the Dubai banks and tried to reassure investors that the banking system there was more sound and liquid than a year ago. This is very deceptive, except to people in the financial world, because what the Abu Dhabi Center, the UAE Central Bank, is saying, that it is going to allow banks in the Emirates, foreign and national banks, to borrow more money so that there isn't a run on the banks. But it isn't backing Dubai World. And as I mentioned before, the Dubai sovereign, Sheikh Maktoum, also is not backing up Dubai World, of which he is the majority owner. What is the significance worldwide, and what was felt in the markets, particularly in the Arab world, such as in Egypt? The full effect of the financial crisis, according to the New York Times, has been masked in recent months by government spending and bailouts. But those interventions have not solved problems in commercial real estate, as demonstrated by Dubai's challenges. The consequences of the financial crisis are going to play out for a while, said Mr. El Arian, who's the chief executive of PIMCO, a giant bond trading company. But what he also said is that Dubai could be the beginning of a series of sovereign debt issues or crisis. And the New York Times points to several countries where these problems have already played out. Ireland, Greece, the Baltic states, Ukraine, Pakistan, Romania, and Bulgaria. The International Monetary Fund has been bailing out some of these countries, such as Pakistan. But what about the Arab world? The UAE, the central bank, the source of the real oil revenue, is saying no. Ralph.
World Socialist website, Alex Messenger, on the 28th of November, Dubai's $59 billion default sends a tremor throughout the entire global financial system. The announcement on Wednesday that Dubai would delay by at least 6 months the maturity date of $59 billion in bonds issued by the city-state's largest state-owned company, Dubai World, has sent global shares tumbling. The market reaction to Dubai's massive debt default is explained by the exposure of European and Asian banks and to DP World and its tourism subsidiary, Nakheel. The reason for the falls is Dubai's insolvency, confirming that default by this hyper-indebted government is a real risk now across the globe, especially in the Middle East and Eastern Europe. The default not only means immediate worsening of the already brutal post-crash conditions suffered by tens of millions of workers in defaulting countries, but this will usher in a second and worse phase in the global financial crisis. A note published by the Bank of America strategists warned of the risk of a major sovereign default across the world. Quote, one cannot rule out the case where this will escalate into major sovereign default, resonating across global emerging markets in the same way that Argentina did in the early 2000s or Russia in the late 1900s, the Bank of America strategy document states. In today's Financial Times, it notes editorially that while markets were not expected to return to the panic of September 2008, fearful investors are worrying about how safe sovereign debt is. They cite Hungary, Ireland, and Greece. The Dubai meltdown represents a small sum in terms of total global indebtedness, but it indicates that despite talk of a so-called global economic recovery, the world financial system is on knife edge. Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of Great Britain, acknowledged the risk that Dubai poses to the global economy with careful understatement. Quote, I think that we may find out that this is not on the scale of previous problems we have dealt with. We are not yet sure. Market falls on news of Dubai crisis were sharpest in Japan. The major banks in Japan, Mitsubishi UFJ, Sumitomo Mitsui, are directly exposed. Japanese shares plummeted yesterday, the market's largest one-day decline in 8 months. A 2.9% fall in Australia reflected the fact that Dubai World carries one-third of Australia's sea cargo. In New York, the share index opened 2% down, 44 billion British pounds sterling. That's roughly $100 billion has been wiped off the London market, the largest single-day loss since March. Shares in Hong Kong Shanghai Bank fell 7%. Other UK banks with Dubai exposure are Standard Chartered, Citigroup, Lloyds, and Royal Bank of Scotland, an institution majority owned by the United Kingdom government, receiving more bailout money than any other bank in the world, $67 billion to the Royal Bank of Scotland alone. What do they do with that money, brothers and sisters? They lend it out to this casino-like boondoggle in Dubai for speculation, for deriving value on which they profit enormously and pocket those profits and hide them off the books. Dubai World accounts for three-quarters of the $80 billion borrowed by state companies to fuel the Emirates' so-called property boom. But that property boom came to an end. Property values were halved as of October 2008. Brothers and sisters, this crisis has been unfolding for a solid year, an expression of the global elite's fantasy of endless wealth, with Dubai's ruling family creating a desert playground for the global rich. Testimony to the irrationality of the global financial system. The scale of the Dubai crisis, which has been apparent for over a year, still caught the global markets unaware. The banks assumed that the existence of so-called government guarantees of the debt, notably by the oil-rich Emirate Abu Dhabi, would function to sustain the operation. It hasn't. On the contrary, it's exacerbated the collapse.
Ralph, I have to interject again that the Sheikh of Dubai, who is the majority owner of Dubai World, is not covering the debt. And what they're looking is to suspend trading of Dubai World, particularly Nakheel, which has its debt due on December 14th. The announcement of Dubai World being unable to meet its debt obligations was timed for holidays. Not only was the New York Stock Exchange closed, but in the Arab world, the markets in the Emirates are closed until next Sunday because of holidays. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let's take a look carefully at what this is. Because, as you say, the expectation that Abu Dhabi with its oil money would rescue these investors was just complete idle hope. Worldwide share market falls, the effect of the Dubai default has resulted in a surge in insurance costs for all these national borrowings, and notably by poorer countries where the poverty is enormous, but the banks of those countries speculate on these empty derivative-based financial boondoggle operations. The cost is represented in the price of credit default swaps on bond issues of those governments. The Greek credit default swaps have skyrocketed, raising fears that Greece, with public debt levels of 130% of the gross domestic product, will collapse within weeks of the Dubai collapse. In Hungary, the CDS, the credit default swaps, have soared, and credit default swap increases of over 11% have occurred in Malaysia, South Korea, and Qatar. This is a an escalating and self-feeding crisis that is spinning out of control, brothers and sisters. As the article by Messenger states, the Dubai default is a lit match, ready to burn tinder, namely global sovereign debt levels. And the key response of capitalist institutions to this global financial crisis has been to transform these toxic debts and unsustainable borrowings into public debt, vast bailout guarantees, which only fuels the crisis to an even deeper level.
Ralph, I'd like to give one specific statistic here. You talk about the credit default swaps. Those are the derivative insurance policies which collapsed here in the United States with the mortgage market. In Dubai, the level of risk, the level of that the credit default swap issuers decided they weren't going to take, meant that in Dubai now, it costs $650,000 a year to insure with a credit default swap $10 billion. Ralph, let's go on to... Okay, go ahead.
Well, Maya, I want to just pick up on what you've just said, because you see, brothers and sisters, the bourgeois press tries to conceal the reality, but it cannot avoid documenting what is really unfolding in spite of itself. Listen to what Moody, the credit rating agency, has documented. The total stock of sovereign debt worldwide has risen 50%. This ballooning of sovereign debt has been so fast and so immense that there is almost no chance for debtor governments mired in unemployment and mired in low growth to repay either in short or long term. So consequently, as this borrowing and lending increases, we have what is called long tail risk, namely that the indebted countries become even more deeply so. Global funds available for the borrowings by these indebted countries are drying up. Greece, Hungary, Latvia, Estonia, and Turkey are at the top of a global watch list. Default is around the corner, an eventual likelihood as well for the United States. As the Financial Times points out, the United States has public debts of $12 trillion, dwarfing those of these countries on the verge of collapse. The key difference between the United States and smaller states is that the U.S. is redeemed by bondholders buying treasuries, including the Chinese government. How long can that last? The Dubai default pierces claims that the so-called well-regulated national world economy can escape the shocks of this financial crisis. They stated before that Australia was immune. Now we find that the DP World collapse, controlling as it does Australian ports, have devastated Australia's infrastructure. Over $1.5 billion are being sold off. This is well articulated, Maya, in the major financial publications of the world.
Ralph, the financial analysts have been asking the question, is Dubai the canary in the coal mine? And the Wall Street Journal on November 30th posed the question, is Dubai a blip or the next Lehman Brothers? Some of the financial analysts have been saying that the overall exposure isn't significant in Dubai compared to what happened at Lehman Brothers. But the Wall Street Journal says the opposite. It writes in its editorial, Dubai World's endangered debt is nearly as large as American International Group's $72 billion exposure to derivative contracts on collateralized debt obligations, the CDOs. And as the CDOs declined in value, AIG had to pay out cash to the CDO owners, including investment banks. That cash drain prompted the U.S. government's $120 billion bailout of AIG, which was meant to save not only the large insurer, but to keep its trading partners that were owed cash payments, particularly Goldman Sachs. The Wall Street Journal goes on to say that Dubai is not known for its transparency. Day by day, more is leaking out about the depth of the Dubai crisis. But the Wall Street Journal adds, quote, while it is possible to calculate the global bank's exposure to the United Arab Emirates, generally, the European banks hold 72% of the region's debt. And their exposure to Dubai World has been trickling out in pieces.
Well, Maya, the articles in the World Financial Press are incapable of concealing the basic reality which affects the world global capitalist market. Financial Times, November 26th, breathtaking blunder in Dubai. Of all the glitzy emirates on the western shore of the Gulf, Dubai is the brashest. With the grenade it is just lobbed into the capital markets, Dubai World is jeopardizing the global economy. Dubai's actions look like a breathtaking cock-up, quote-unquote, from the Financial Times, a breathtaking cock-up. It leaves a trail of unanswered questions that have done undeniable damage. And it states the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, has been spending the entire year trying to put this house in order. The breakneck growth of his city-state built on cheap foreign money and foreign labor has been brought to a juddering halt by a credit crunch and a vast recession. And the articulation of what this article in the Financial Times calls a breathtaking blunder is amplified by the Financial Times on the next day. Dubai reveals the fragility of global finance. Only when the tide goes out do you find out that those artificial islands are built on sand. Dubai, the glitzy debt-fueled emirate famous for extravagant skyscrapers and man-made lagoons, has defaulted on its debt. The solvency of Dubai is in jeopardy. And Maya, I suggest that we return next week to the particular designation and delineation of the global crisis, but I want us to address an extraordinary article in The Independent in London last April 7th, 2009, entitled The Dark Side of Dubai. The wide smiling face of Sheikh Mohammed, the absolute ruler of Dubai, beams down on his creation. His image is displayed on every other building, sandwiched between the more familiar corporate rictuses of Ronald McDonald and Colonel Sanders. This man has sold Dubai to the world as the city of 1001 Arabian Nights, a Shangri-La in the Middle East, insulated from the dust storms blasting across the region. He dominates the Manhattan Monkey skyline, beaming out from row after row of glass pyramids and hotels smelted into the shape of piles of golden coins. And there he stands on the tallest building in the world, a skinny spike jabbing farther into the sky than any other human construction in history. Something has flickered in Sheikh Mohammed's smile. The ubiquitous cranes have paused on the skyline, stuck in time. Countless buildings, half-finished, abandoned, in the swankiest new constructions like the vast Atlantis Hotel, a giant pink castle built in 1,000 days for $1.5 billion on an artificial island where rainwater today leaks from the ceilings and the tiles are falling from the roof. This Neverland was built on the never-never, and the cracks are now showing. It looks less like Manhattan in the sun than Iceland in the desert. Maya?
This is an extremely moving article by Johan Hari, who spent some time in Dubai and writes in great detail about the dark side of Dubai. He says there are three different Dubais all swirling around each other. There are the expatriates. Then there are the Emiratis, the people of the Emirates, and the local population is only 5% of the total population of Dubai. And then, most of all, there are the foreign underclass who built the city and are trapped there. They are hidden in plain view. You see them everywhere in dirt-cake blue uniforms being shouted at by their superiors like a chain gang, but you are trained not to look. It's like a mantra. The Sheikh built the city. The Sheikh built the city. Workers? What workers? Every evening, he writes, the hundreds of thousands of young men who build Dubai are bussed from their sites to a vast concrete wasteland an hour out of town, where they are quarantined away. Until a few years ago, they were shuttled back and forth on cattle trucks. But the expats, that's the expatriates, complained that this was unsightly. So now they are shunted on small metal buses that function like greenhouses in the desert heat. They sweat like sponges being slowly wrung out. Sonepur is a rubble-strewn patchwork of miles and miles of identical concrete buildings. Some 300,000 men live piled up here in a place whose name in Hindi means City of Gold. In the first camp I stopped at, riven with the smell of sewerage and sweat, the men huddle around, eager to tell someone, anyone, what is happening to them. Ralph?
Sahanil Munir, a slim 24-year-old from the deltas of Bangladesh, quote, "To get you here, they tell you Dubai is heaven. Then you get here and realize it is hell. 4 years ago, an employment agent arrived at Sahanal's village in southern Bangladesh. He told the men of the village there was a place where they could earn 40,000 taka a month, about 400 pounds sterling, just for working 9 to 5 on construction projects. It was a place where they would be given great accommodation, great food, and treated well. All they had to do was pay an upfront fee of 220,000 taka. That's 2,300 pounds sterling, over $5,000 from impoverished people, for the work visa. A fee they would pay off in the first 6 months. Easy. Sahanal sold his family land, took out a loan from local lenders to head to this paradise. As soon as he arrived at Dubai Airport, his passport was taken from him by his construction company. He has not seen it since. He was told brusquely that from now on he would be working 14 hours in the desert heat, where Western tourists are advised not to stay outside for 5 minutes. The temperature hits 55 degrees centigrade. That's over 140 degrees.
In the summer.
For 500 dirhams a month, less than a quarter of the wage he was promised. If you don't like it, the company told him, go home. How can I go home? You have my passport. I have no money for the ticket. Yes, well, you better get to work, they replied. Sahanal was in panic. His family back home, his son, his daughter, his wife and parents, were waiting for money, excited that their boy had finally made it. He was going to have to work for more than 2 years just to pay the cost of getting here, all to earn less than he did in Bangladesh. His room, a tiny, pokey concrete cell with triple-decker bunk beds where he lives with 11 other men. His belongings are piled into his bunk, 3 shirts, a pair of trousers, and a cell phone. The room stinks. The lavatories are holes in the ground backed up with excrement and clouds of black flies. No air conditioning, no fans. The heat is unbearable. You cannot sleep. You sweat and scratch all night. At the height of summer, people sleep on the floor, on the roof, anywhere where they can pray for a moment of breeze. The water delivered to the camp in huge white containers isn't properly desalinated. It tastes of salt. It makes us sick. We have nothing else in the world to drink.
Ralph, a Human Rights Watch study found that there is, quote, a cover-up of the true extent, end quote, of deaths from heat exhaustion, overwork, and suicide. But the Indian consulate, for instance, registered 971 deaths of their nationals in 2005 alone. After that figure was leaked, the consulates were told to stop counting. We're out of time today. We will continue this subject next week, the collapse of Dubai and the deepening global capitalist crisis and the underpinning of it. Ralph?
Brothers and sisters, the dark side of Dubai is the dark side of capitalist global economic reality. Misery, starvation, exploitation, growing immiseration and starvation built upon glitz, super profits, speculation, and an empty system in terminal decay.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Dubai and the Deepening Global Capitalist Crisis, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com.
Big, 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 big